Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are here live at the Coyote Hills Kennel Club Dog Show in Vallejo, California. And I have a guest I've been trying to get on the air for a year now. Bruce Schultz is joining me, professional handler, and someone who's been there, done that in the sport. So thanks, Bruce. I appreciate you sitting down with me.
You're welcome. Glad
Excellent.
I had the time.
So tell us how you got started. What started you in purebred dogs? What brought you to being a professional handler for these many years? We won't tell them how many.
I don't care how many. As a young man and everything else, I always loved hunting and all that kind of stuff. And my first really, really good hunting dog was a German short hair pointer that was probably one of the best hunting dogs that I've ever had, that I bought from Armstrong Kennels in Anoka, Minnesota for $50. Because he was given back to the kennel because he didn't hunt for the owner that bought him. So I bought him for $50. The dog was so dedicated and so smart that it was unbelievable. And I shot many a pheasants under that dog and everything else. And he was a great, great hunting dog. So after I got out of there, my first wife, Julie, moved to Phoenix. And I always wanted an Irish setter. My dream was to have an Irish setter. So I started looking through the papers, and lo and behold, here's a litter of Irish setters that was out of purebred dogs and everything. Mm-hmm. So we contacted this person and started talking to her and everything else, and she was into obedience, and she's still in dogs today.
Serious.
Really, and she was basically my first mentor in purebred dogs, because I started off in obedience, showing the Irish setter puppy that I had bought from her in obedience. I had a CD on him when he was 9 months old.
And okay, a CD on a nine-month-old Irish setter is pretty impressive.
Oh, my God. When I tell this story, they go, nine-month-old Irish setter? That's unbelievable. So yeah. I got this dog, and I started working with him, started going to the shows, going in obedience, traveling to different parts of Southern California and Arizona, and watched confirmation classes, and my first impression of confirmation classes, well, these guys don't have to do anything but run around the ring, pose their dogs, and someone points at them. Obedience, we've got to work at it, and we have a judge that scores you, and if you make a mistake, that means you're out of there.
Yeah.
And eventually, I got to know a number of people and everything else at the shows, and then pretty soon, I bought a couple of Irish setter bitches, and I started showing them, and gradually worked my way up and went to the shows, and then I got started showing enough to where other people started asking me, hey, Bruce, do you want to show my dog for me? And sure, they probably wanted it for nothing.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, they asked me, hey, can you show my dog? Well, sure. I'm not going to charge you anything. Because at that time, you couldn't charge someone,
right?
Because
this was back in the days when you had to be licensed.
That is correct. So I started doing that and everything, and I got really hooked on it, and started traveling more and more and more and showing more dogs, mm-hmm. and here I am.
And were you ever licensed, or did you start showing more after?
I got licensed
okay.
right at the end, right before right. they did the big thing.
Right. So. And that was in like 70...
Oh, yeah, it was 78. I moved to California in 1978 from Arizona, so it had to be in that time frame.
Okay. And you have piloted some pretty amazing dogs. You've shown a lot of Akitas and Golden Retrievers. Those are kind of like the things that I think of you over the years I've watched you show dogs.
I've shown some wonderful, wonderful dogs. And I think every handler should be blessed to show the dogs that I was able to show. Because, you know, and there's a lot of handlers that show brilliant dogs. And I've been very, very lucky. I mean, just, I hold a number of records. I showed the top winning German short hair pointer in the history of the breed, and it still holds.
Mm-hmm. Britannica.
Yep. And got 50 best in shows and 150 groups under in 2 years.
I didn't realize it was only 2 years.
And that was in the 80s.
Right.
2 years. Yep.
Wow. That's very impressive for a short hair in the 80s.
Yep. And then I followed that up with the thing with Setter Bitch, the Silk Teddy. Mm-hmm. That had the same amount of groups and same amount of best in shows 3 national specialties in a row, and that was in 2 years.
Here's a great question for you, because what you were just talking about, the short time period that you showed these dogs, and I am of the opinion, and always have been, that showing the dog for a long time is hard for them. What is your ideal length of time to show a dog? If you're going to campaign a dog, you've got a great one, what's your ideal plan?
Usually it's 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. It all depends on the dog. There are dogs that love to do it, and that's all they want to do is go into the ring and show and everything else. And every dog is totally different. I mean, totally. So you've got to not only think of the owners of the dog wanting to do it and you wanting to do it and all that kind of stuff. You got to think about the dog and everything. So just those 2 dogs could have gone further. But I figured, hey, I did enough with them in the time period that I did. And one of the things that Carol Chadwick wanted to do with Britannia was to go into the field with her.
And she was a dual champion, wasn't she?
She was a national field champion.
She was a national field champion. Nice.
So,
which is an awesome accomplishment.
Yeah. And in the working group, I've shown bloodhounds. I mean, I've shown for Susan Hamill for 30 years.
Susan was on the show and talked about bloodhounds. So,
she was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right. Okay. She talked about bloodhounds.
Wonderful,
and
wonderful person.
Yeah,
and
loved talking to her.
Oh, I love her. Just absolutely love her.
Really impressive, the work that she's doing with Canine Health Foundation. And some of that was just very cool. For you guys that haven't heard it, go back and listen to Susan's show. It was really good. Very good.
She's a wonderful lady. So, but anyway, you know, bloodhounds and borzois. Mm-hmm. I had one of the top hounds in the country was a borzoi that I showed.
So you've pushed to the top. Oh, and I think that that takes a very special, and I've talked to a few other people that have done this, that running for number one, that trying to go all the way to the top, that takes so much dedication and effort on everybody's part. The dog's part, the handler's part, the owner's part.
And I don't think a lot of people understand how time-consuming and mentally and physically draining it is for everyone, from the owner right down to the handler to the dog and everything else. And that's one of the biggest things, is keeping the dog mentally capable of doing it.
And that has to be your first priority.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And border collies, I showed one of the first dogs that were recognized in the United States and everything else.
Remember that dog.
And
what was that dog?
There was a number of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I showed Jack, and he was from Australia. And
yes, that's the one I remember.
He had 35 Best in Shows in Australia, and we had 16 or 17 here.
And that was right after they first were recognized by AKC, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty much so. And I don't know how many times I went group 2 behind Jim Moses at the Garden.
And you were friends with Jim Moses.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. At the time I was showing...
Did you ever get to beat him?
At the Garden? No. I got to beat him one time in the group.
There you go.
One time.
Once in how many years? 30.
And I know. And I can still remember the show. It was at Snake River, Idaho.
So, see? Okay, that's important stuff, man.
That's right. And we've remained friends over the years and everything, but business is business and all that kind of stuff. I showed against Pepsi so much at the same time with Britannia, and then I showed against Runner with the English Setter Bitch.
Which one's Runner?
He followed up
Pepsi. After Pepsi. Okay.
Yeah, the front
runner. Remember, right,
Quebec's
right, right.
Runner.
Yes.
Pepsi was one of my favorite dogs of all time.
Love that dog.
Yeah. A great, great show dog and everything else. And I didn't mind. And Chris and I used to travel together. I mean, if we flew somewhere, we'd go to dinner and take care of the dogs together, and whoever won, won.
And I think that that's something we can touch on here. We hear people talk. People talk all the time. Oh, I can't. They're mean and this and this. I miss the days where we all hang out. And you can be the fiercest competitor and be wanting to win in the ring, and it's okay to still be friends
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you've got to be happy for the other person and everything. I think that's why maybe I've lasted as long as I have, because I know that there's good dogs out there besides my dogs and everything, and I'm happy for the people that win, just like they should be happy for me. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen all the time.
Well, and I think that's, again, something that we should seek to find again in our sport.
Oh, absolutely. I can remember going on circuits, Idaho, Montana, and Washington, and all the guys would get together, go and play golf at night or go fishing at night. The girls had to get together and go do something, you know, whether it was shopping or whatever. But everyone got together and just enjoyed each other.
Right. Because you all like to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's okay that you won.
We all like to win.
Yeah. We all want to win. But if we don't, it doesn't make that other person awful.
Absolutely. And the problem with a lot of the people that are coming in now is they expect to win every show, with no matter what they bring into the ring. And they think that everything has to be fixed for them and everything else to go best in show or whatever. And why don't you just show the dogs. Get together at the end. And we used to have fish fries and steak fries and people mingled. And
do you remember when Beep and Char used to do this? They had that fellow, Nick.
Nick,
and he would sing. Were you ever around when we would do that? And we would sit around and have sing-alongs. It was like, that's what I remember.
I ran into Nick.
Did you?
The parking at Timberland. He did the parking
for
his grandma.
Yes. The one I'm thinking of is the fellow, I think he had St. Bernard's. Anyway, but those are the kind of things that we remember.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I keep trying to figure out a way to rekindle that because I miss it. You know, it was fun.
Yep.
It was fun.
And the exhibitors today, a lot of them don't have a clue of the past. And I think that they've got to go back and look into the past and see who did what and what great dogs were and the breeders of these dogs. And they don't study pedigrees. They just go out and breed. And they don't have a clue of who the grandparents are. And the grandparents are a big influence on the get all the time.
I was blown away. This is a perfect example. Someone that wanted to breed to one of my stud dogs. And I said, you know, I don't think it's a really good match for, you know, this particular bitch you're talking about. I said, why don't you go talk to Mildred Ravel? It was Weidenhugel, which is where most of my dogs were half Mildred Ravel's dogs. So one would think if you were going to breed a stud dog, you'd have looked at the pedigree, right? He said, who's that?
No.
Like, no, exactly. No.
Exactly.
Now, automatically, that was now going to be a no.
And that's the difference between the breeders nowadays and the good breeders in the past studied pedigrees and they knew the backgrounds of all the dogs that they bred to. They studied their breed.
And I think the best breeders today still do that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They've got to.
Yeah. Because that's how you're successful.
And a lot of the good dogs and different breeds and everything else, if you look back, or even now, those breeders are still on top with their bloodlines because they do work at it.
They are breeding to an idea, to a goal. I want to achieve this.
Sure, absolutely.
Rather than, I want to win this group over here.
Yeah.
So, now, I have a question for you. Now, we talked about this. Are you ready? Tips. I want you to give suggestions for people in the ring. It's down to you and the next guy. What are your three top suggestions, your tips for how to come out on top?
First of all, you got to make sure that your dog is presented well. Second, you try to get the judge's attention. And one of my dearest friends, Corky Vroom, said, Bruce, I go into the group ring and I try to get into this judge's mind just looking at him and sending out vibes to him.
Corky was very good at that.
So, I mean, whether it works or not or whatever, one of the things that you got to think about, you just try your hardest to present the dog the best way that you can and make the judge look at you and make the judge point at you.
Almost by force of will.
Yeah. Sometimes he's not, sometimes they are. And the harder you work, maybe the judge is going to go, hey, this guy really wants it.
The dog and the handler have to want it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so now our big question for the night. We were working on this. Our dream best in show lineup. So of all the amazing dogs you've seen over the years, who would win each group and who would go best in show?
The first one, the sporting group, I think I would want to see Rock Falls Colonel, which is the top winning English setter in the history of the breed, and no one will ever touch his record unless someone gets very, very lucky. And he was owner handled. I think he's got 110 best in shows, and that was back 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And that dog could pretty much compete with the dogs that are right now.
This was beautiful on that dog.
I mean, he was Rock Falls Colonel. He was a great dog.
And I've only seen pictures of him.
Yeah. In the hound group, probably, I loved Pepsi.
So we have Pepsi the Afghan Hound. And we have Rock Falls Colonel, the English Setter.
The English Setter, yes. Working Dog. Boy, there's been so many good Working Dogs and everything over the years. I guess I'd like to see Miss About Corky's old Doberman.
Oh, wow. Okay.
From years ago.
I would
like to see that, yeah. Terriers, probably Mick.
The Kerry Blue.
Yeah. And toys. God, there's so many good toys. The dog that I really like right now in toys is the pug from back east that's doing a lot of winning.
Oh, right now? Yes. Esteban's dog?
Esteban's
dog. That's a whale of a dog.
I think he's beautiful.
I love that dog.
Yeah.
I am on board with that.
And as far as non-sporting, Timmy's old standard poodle that he did so much winning with and everything
else. Blue Sky's outrageous dog.
Yeah, I think he's beautiful. For the herding group, probably Rumor, which I think is probably one of the best dogs overall that I've seen.
And like you said, you're friends with Jimmy Moses. You've seen a lot of really good ones.
Yeah. I've seen them all.
Yeah.
And we've talked about them and everything, hasn't it?
Okay, so out of that amazing lineup, who goes best in show?
Oh, boy. Oh, that would be rough. How about best in reserve?
There you go. Best in reserve. I like it. We haven't done that yet.
That's right.
That's good. That's good. So who's reserve best in show?
I think reserve would be Pepsi, and best in show would probably be Rumor.
Wow. That's awesome. Two best in show winners right there at the Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Beautiful dogs.
I liked both of them very much. I've liked all these. But there's so many different dogs that I've liked over the years. And your question to narrow it down to seven.
That's why I had to give you a little advance notice. But I think it's a great exercise, don't you? I love doing it. It makes you think back and like compare some of these dogs. And what is that dog that stands out for you?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. If you'd ask someone here, you know, who is Rock Falls Colonel?
Right.
What breed is that?
Right. But I think that's the beauty of it, is our listeners are now going to go look up Rock Falls Colonel. Like, I've looked at him because I've read some of the books where they talk about these great dogs. Because I'm not that old. I didn't get to see that dog.
Yeah, and he was owner-handled.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so was Pepsi.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The last full-on, total amateur owner to win the Best in Show at the Garden. I mean, Valerie is definitely an owner-handler, but he was an amateur. I mean, he was just a guy.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And Chris Terrell.
He didn't show any other dogs but his own.
Nope. And Chris Terrell, I'd see him at the dog shows. I wasn't a little kid, but I was young, you know, coming to the dog shows. I have tried several times to get Chris on the on the show because I can remember seeing him at the dog show and being, he was like an enigma at the dog show. You know, he was so quiet.
Yeah.
Always. Thank you very much, Bruce. Okay. I really appreciate your time. Okay. I know you have a dog to show. Okay. So, thank you.
No problem whatsoever.
Appreciate it.
I'm glad I could do it. I'm glad we finally got
I know. We've been trying.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Okay.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.